donate to KPFT, support us, because they know that's what keeps KPFT independent. Why wait for a pledge drive? You can join KPFT online at kpft.org. Thomas Jefferson said, "People cannot be both ignorant and free." Help keep KPFT vibrant with your financial contribution. Visit kpft.org to join securely online. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch means it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and it's time for So What's Your Story. It's the coolest place on the dial because it's the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown, along with our indispensables, Shannon McGurchy. Our guest tonight is transplanted Texan and professional teller Larry Thompson. From the back porch to backyard, conference hall to concert hall, feisty festivals to facilitating workshops, Larry's signature full contact style sets the tone of every performance he gives, whether it's the batch of Texas lore he loves, collection of homegrown tales, yarns to warm you around the campfire, or those to send chills down your spine on a seemingly tepid night. His awards include the coveted honor of being named Least Forgettable Performer at the 2012 Trembling Hills Rehab Center Friends and Fish Cook-Off. Wow, that's a popular one, huh? I can't even say it. How can anybody even show up? And a previous champion of the 2012 Houston Liars Contest, and that's the truth. Larry has recorded CDs of old and new favorites, and he's published a book of his own stories, including a collection of Western tales titled Wild West, Plastic Cowboys, and Indians Have Feelings Too. He's a member of the National Storytelling Network, the American Society of Training and Development. He's past president of the San Antonio Storytelling Association, and he is the current president of the Board of Directors for the Tejas Storytelling Association. You have got a heck of a resume.
Is it over already?
It's amazing. I know. I don't know. It's either you or President Obama. I don't know who has a longer resume, Larry. That's amazing.
Well,
congratulations.
You know, one thing that's not included on there, I was the official pick-up and drop-off award winner for a chauffeur party back in probably 2007. That was my first award.
Yeah, that had to drive you crazy.
Yeah,
okay,
definitely.
Yeah. How'd you get in the storytelling business?
You know, I'm the guy, when people say, are you some kind of wise guy? I say, well, yes, I am. Yeah. And it really comes from growing up. I've been telling stories my entire life. It's, I think having an ability and being blessed with an ability not to be afraid to get in front of a crowd, that's a big part of it.
And you know something, and I've watched you perform several times. You're an excellent storyteller. You really are. But I know just because I can tell by your style that you're not afraid of getting in front of a crowd, but there is a little bit of nervousness, a little bit of apprehension. There's anticipation. The thing is that the story itself means more than the apprehension you feel about delivering.
That is exactly right. I don't know any storyteller who doesn't feel that tinge of nerves. You're about to step in front of, you know, an either even number or odd number set of eyeballs staring at you, depending on where the crowd is. And a million things could go wrong.
Right.
But if you know the material you're about to present,
that's right,
and you're confident in what's going to happen, you're going to be on the right.
And I know you love personal stories in particular. You've got a whole bunch of different various stories that you like to tell. And one of your favorites is personal yarns. And you told me that they really spawn from people in your life, relationships, unique human episodes. How do you know when a life experience is worthy of a story?
It's Every experience is probably worthy of a story. The question is, can you feel a character? Can you feel something for the person who's experiencing that story? Stories for me come from all over the place. Yeah. And I'll get an idea or a thought or an image or something right. that'll happen in a dream, and a story will come from that.
Yeah.
They grow. It happens.
Right. And you got a couple of stories for us tonight. Is there anything about the first story that you want us to know before you kick it off?
So
does it have a title?
This story, this is a brand new story. I've never performed this story anywhere before.
Okay,
nobody's
so you're
heard
premiere
this.
It right
yeah,
here.
I'm going to premiere it right
okay,
here. So
great.
You're going to want to put this on your, you know, that catch-up show that,
oh, yeah.
that you've got coming
yeah, yeah,
up.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
This story came from, just like some of the other stories I have, something will happen. I saw an advertisement on TV for insurance, and the son wrecked the dad's car. And I thought, oh, that's horrible. How many times has that happened to you, you know, people you know? And I thought, well, wait a minute. I might be able to use something like this because, you know, I've been telling stories for quite some time and raising three kids. They've heard all my stories. They know the unbreakable comb. They know the
right.
armadillo demons.
Right,
they know all
right,
these
right,
stories.
Right.
And, you know, just like any kid growing up, you start to maybe experiment a little. You know, you probably did it when you were a kid, and you try to emulate your old man if you can and
yep.
do the things that
yep,
your
yep.
uncles did, stuff like
sure.
that. And so
sure.
I got to thinking about maybe that one time when you're asleep at night and, you know, you just fell fast asleep. The phone rings and you roll over and you say hello, and a feeble voice on the other end just says, "Dad." And you think automatically something is happening. You say, "Son, what is it? Are you okay?" And he says, "Dad, I wrecked your story." And I think, oh, you got to be kidding me. What, you know, and your parent side hasn't kicked in yet. Your performer side is there. And you're like, oh, no, which one is it? Oh, is there going to be a Facebook post about it? Is there photos? Was somebody there? Did anybody capture this thing? And then your parent takes over and you say, "Are you okay?" And he says, yeah, I'm okay. But, and then you think, well, son, which story was it? And you're going through your catalog and you're thinking, oh, I hope it's not. And he says, "Billy Ray Loves Moon Pies." And you just think, oh, that son, how many times have I told you that's way too much story for you? You know, it's got speed. It's got strange corners. There's motions. There's screaming from the crowd. There's actions. It's much too much story for you. And your parent comes out again and you say, well, at least you're okay. But the other part of your parent comes out and says, you know, it's time. It's that moment, that coming of age moment. And you set up an appointment the next week and you take them down to the used story store in San Antonio. That's like Half Price Books or something, right? It's time to get him his own first story. And so you take him in and right away the salesman descends on you and you're trying to hold him off, you know, hey, we're just browsing. We're just looking here. And he says, well, we're looking for something fancy. And you say, no, we're just looking for a good first, you know, a good first story, a good starter. And he looks my son up and down and he says, you look like you might be interested in a classic. Let me show you something over here. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is not going to go well. The classics, they take so much time and energy. I remember taking my daughter to the store to get some book on Greece. And we pulled out Euripides and I pointed to it. And I said, "Euripides, you pay for these." And we slid it back in, you know, and I'm trying to steer him towards something a little more, you know, appropriate for a first story. And the salesman's talking to him and my son whispers, he says, you know, I'm looking for maybe something that's maybe a foreign job, maybe a cute foreign job. And I think, oh, son, you're going to have to be bilingual for that. You know, maybe we just need a starter collection, maybe some short stories, just something for you to. And he catches his eye on a little copy of London. And he's thinking, oh, London, maybe that's foreign and short stories. And, hey, that's a good compromise. And the salesman pulls it out. And my son, he thumbs the pages, that used book smell. And he feels the corners. They're not too roughed up, you know. And he turns it over and he sees the sticker price. And he's like, hey, I can afford this. I'm taking it home. So we sign the papers over and we ride back home. And, you know, I have that gleam in my eye because I remember that first time I picked up Jack London, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, this my favorite one, To Build a Fire. Oh, these stories. He promises you he's going to take care of it. You know, and he's true to his word. It's clean. His hands are washed when he's reading, and he gets onto his buddies if they mishandle it, you know. And a few weeks later, he calls everyone together in the family, sits us all down. And he says, I think I'm ready to take it for a spin. And for the next 10 minutes or so, he's reeling off a story. And, you know, he had a little pregnant pause here and there, you know, and he missed a line and just, you know, just briefly, but he did a fantastic job. And, you know, there's a special pride in a parent when that son breaks out his first story.
Wow. Fabulous. Now, let me tell you something. I want to comment about the story. But this is an example of your full context style. I asked you a question. I asked, you know, what is it that makes a story worthy? You answered that question, and then you very fluidly segue into the story. Now, that doesn't sound like a very profound thought, but that's a hard thing to do, right? That's a tough thing to do, because you had me.
Well,
you know, you had me.
You know, the other half of full context is really getting something to happen in the story and making the audience respond.
Yeah, I love it.
And, you know, Shannon, the indispensable Shannon, was laughing out loud at one point in that story.
She laughs at everything. She laughs at
But we paid her special
to laugh at you. But
oh,
yes.
Well, all right then. That's good.
But it was funny. It was funny. You have a great sense of humor. And humor is critical because that's a lot different than comedy. It's a lot, you know, comedy is you slip on a banana peel. Tragedy is I slip on a banana peel. You, on the other hand, you've got a great sense of humor. You demonstrate the anecdotes of narrow-mindedness in a way. You also talk about the frailties of the human condition. You use your son as the bedrock of that story. I love it.
I'm not going to tell you which son that is, though.
No. Oh, you have how many sons?
I've got three kids.
Yeah.
And usually I say I have one of each just to see if people are paying attention. Right. And then sometimes they say, oh, well, that's nice. That's nice. Right. And then others go, huh? What? Wait, mm-hmm. What?
One of each.
So two boys and a girl. And I have two stepsons and a stepdaughter now as well.
Fabulous.
So they're six. You know, it's almost the Brady Bunch.
Love it. I'm Hank Rubinchek with Shannon McKerchy, and you are listening to guest storyteller Larry Thompson on So What's Your Story? Always live and only on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston, or kpft.org if you are listening online. But whatever avenue you've traveled to get here, I am glad you are here. Larry, how do you determine a start point, you know, a point of entry to a story? We mentioned earlier that you really segue into that beautifully. But
this is
you,
the hard-hitting journalism part of the hour.
It's
right. Difficult. A lot of times my stories come from a single idea or a phrase, and it might appear in the middle.
Right.
It might appear at the end. Yeah. It might be a goal I'm working towards.
Mm-hmm.
Some stories I build in outward directions from that idea.
Right.
But usually while I'm writing a story, a beginning will happen, just like with that previous story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to talk about wrecking the story and getting a new story. The beginning happens when you have to set up that line. And it really doesn't, as you mentioned, it doesn't really have a ready, set, go start point.
Right.
We don't have a once upon a time
and
the story starts.
Yeah, we don't. And that's what makes personal stories so challenging and interesting. We don't have a once upon a time.
It also gives you a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, sure.
As a performer, if I need to have a little bit shorter, I can make that adjustment. If I need a little bit longer, I can make that adjustment. Mm-hmm. If I get lost in the middle of the story, which never happens, but.
And they're all different kinds of techniques. Elizabeth Ellis, Elizabeth Ellis, who we had on the air, and Shannon remembers her, was a marvelous, marvelous storyteller. And her book, Inviting the Wolf In particular, talks about point of entry. And she talks about the importance of trying to start with conflict.
Yes.
And that means that we try to start with something as enticing as possible. We start with something like, I open the door, and this guy said, I'm your father, and I say, I don't have one. You know, we start with something like that.
Some tension.
Some attention. And you ease into that kind of conflict, but you do something first. You really do a great job at engaging us with something a little more conversation, a little bit more participative.
A little more conversational, but also thinking of something that's common to the audience.
Yeah.
If I'm going to pick a set of stories, I need to know who I'm about to speak to because I want to have something that they're going to relate to. So if you have a a large audience that's spread out across all the age groups.
Right.
You've got to pick something that's going to match all of them. Sometimes a conflict will work with parents. Sometimes a conflict will work with kids.
Right.
Sometimes a topic will work with a wide variety of people.
Yeah.
The full contact generally works with younger audiences, but the adults love it too.
Yeah. Give us a short list of some of your favorite tellers.
A short list. Boy, I'm not sure how much time we have left, but you know, I like Donna Ingham out of Spicewood. Mm-hmm. She's a fantastic storyteller and always engaging to my ear. My friend Mike Miller from Charlton, South Carolina, he really pushed me into storytelling many years ago. And he's got a fantastic wit that's lightning speed. And that always impresses me and makes me want to pay attention.
Different styles.
TV and movies, you know, I really like clever and smart writing and smart storytelling. Don't put a laugh track behind it. I really want to be engaged by the words that are coming out of the characters.
Yeah.
And a lot of writers can do that really well.
Yeah. Shannon, have you got a couple in mind? You're a writer.
I do have. I had to go with Elizabeth Ellis. She is my favorite. And O. Henry.
Yeah.
O. Henry has amazing short stories.
O. Henry. That's a great. Yeah. Marvelous,
I mean, just powerful. The ability in these few pages. I mean, there's many other short story writers, but just the diversity he was able to have between, you know, stories at that time were amazing.
Yeah. You know, Sid Lieberman, who recently died.
Yes.
I don't know, Sid Lieberman with a Y, S-Y-D. It's an interesting person who a lot of people don't know about in the storytelling world, but he was magnificent. The recent periodical of the Storytelling Magazine from Storytelling Network did a wonderful, wonderful story about him. And he was one of my favorite tellers. And for those listening, it's S-Y-D-L-I-E-B-E-R-M-A-N, Sid Lieberman. Very, very wonderful teller who could do anything from a story about Gettysburg to stories about the Holocaust. And everything was laced with Lieberman's style, acute vividness, sharp clarity, emotional rawness. He's all over YouTube. So I really do invite so many of our listeners to listen to him, right? He's terrific.
Definitely.
And then Shannon got me thinking about writers. Like, for me, Edgar Allan Poe is very revealing because he offers the depth of the human soul. And Rod Serling, who I met once, right? And we did a Twilight episode arrangement once on this show. He was magnificent. He was the master of human narratives, you know? And there's so many that we really do look to. And one of the things that the three of us are sharing in our short lists is that they're all different styles. And a good storyteller has to have an amalgamation of those styles.
I think
They really have to collect them.
You know, we didn't mention J. Frank Dobie, you know, who is the premier Texas storyteller writer that, you know, that comes out. I mean, O. Henry is a perfect example of a guy who can take a commonplace topic and turn it into a fascinating story that you can't put down. You pick it up again and again and again to read it.
Right.
But amalgamation is a good word.
It just is.
You have to have that. You know, football season around the corner, and you know that really high-priced guys are the ones who can do so many things for a team, lead the team and whatnot. But a storyteller who can take something as simple as a nursery rhyme and then go as complex as something about wartime that they wrote.
Sure.
I mean, it's incredible talent.
Style is critical. You know, whatever your style is, you're going to discover it at the Story Swaps held by our great sponsor, the Houston Storytellers.
Definitely.
We were asking about them earlier. We meet on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Multi-Service Center located at 1475 West Gray. Check out their site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for events, fun happenings, and more, particularly Larry's concert this Saturday. And Shannon, tell us that time and location, please.
Okay. It happens at Saturday, the 5th to the 7th p.m. at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church. That's 1819 Heights Boulevard.
Yes.
77008.
Thank you.
It also features some of the great tellers like Sheila Starks Phillips.
Right.
And Sally Goodrum.
Yep. Thank you very much. Should
be
great.
It's going to be a great night.
Yeah, it'll be a great night. It really will be. Grab the kids.
We're
going to
have a lot of fun.
And yours truly, of course.
Yeah, Bex is around the corner. We're going to find out from Larry what we're going to expect from this goofy guy in just a moment. We really are. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And also, if any of you have any questions about storytelling, program ideas, if you'd like to be a guest on this program, pay me a lot of money. No, but if you want to be a guest on the program or you want to recommend someone else as a guest, send me an email at drhank@kpft.org, and I will get back to you. Shannon identified a terrific guest for us next week, Jackie Young, who is the executive director of the San Jacinto River Coalition, if I have that right. And you found her here at the station.
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that.
Through Ecology. She was a speaker. She has a fantastic personal story about her family's struggle with illness from the exposure of toxic chemicals from the San Jacinto River toxic pits that were buried there. Basically, from their water well, just living around their house, they were being poisoned, and they didn't know why until she did a lot of research, and that inspired her to go into it and advocacy against for the environment and knowledge about where these pits are.
And
so
thank you for getting her, because who we have next week, we will get again, and that is poet laureate Dr. Robin Davidson from UHD, and we're going to get her back on too. But thank you very much for that. Don't miss it, but why would you want to miss any week, right? I mean, we got Jackie coming up, but why would you want to miss any week at all? Larry, give us a few moments just telling us, what can we expect Saturday night?
We're going to have some fun. We're going to have energy.
Yeah.
I'm going to be wearing a clean shirt.
I think
there's going to be some
snacks.
Thank God,
because, you know, we're all going to be really very grateful
That's true, especially at the end when, you know, typically we get a big hug around going.
Yeah, I know. If you could do that, we'd appreciate it.
But really, if you've seen storytelling before, you're not going to be let down. If you haven't seen it before, you're going to be surprised at what you hear and how it goes. Sally and Sheila will be there also,
they're fantastic. Yeah, we don't want to clip them out of this. They are something else. Now, we've got another story.
We do have another story. And this one comes up. This is a piece of cowboy poetry. I do a fair amount of that.
All right.
And this is something that relates back to where we were talking before, where the start comes from. This story wraps around one particular phrase that I use over and over again in the piece of poetry. And I call this "It Takes a Cowboy." And who's going to free that bound up calf when trouble he's caught in? Or move the herd from wind to lee when storms are blowing in, or dip some water in his own hat so his horse can take a slurp. Honest truth, if you want that done, it takes a cowboy, sir. It takes a cowboy tall and thin to tell the tale just right. He'll pull your legs to dabgum hard, his stories will delight. But his eyes will glisten over when he speaks about his years. It takes a cowboy by surprise, that need to push back tears. It takes a cowboy's calloused hands to ease his child's ball, to rock that baby soft and slow, lullaby in a Texas drawl. His kids are spoiled from that first time he peeks into their eyes, and it takes a cowboy's breath away that life starts so pint-sized. And it takes a cowboy and those same hands to gather for his gal a bouquet of wildflowers from out beside that corral. And she knows it takes a cowboy to vex and irritate, but she knows that he'll be true when he finally takes his mate. And it takes a cowboy's fortitude, step back from a fight, but he'll whip up on any malcontent who don't treat his partners right. And he'll sip a cocktail beverage and shoot a game of pool, but all in moderation so as not to be thought a fool. And just takes a cowboy thinking back on things he learned in youth, his daddy and his pawpaw teaching him the truth. Honesty and loyalty will always be preferred, and it makes a cowboy's handshake a statement of his word. And he'll take to bed in life's dark evening after years of doing right, and hit his knees in solitude to give thanks in that dim light for things he's seen and done and heard, for friends and horses too. It takes a cowboy straight and strong, but this you always knew. And God leads him through by his own hand wherever cowboys roam, until that quiet moment when his Lord takes a cowboy home.
You are artistically ambidextrous, my friend. Beautiful job.
Thank you.
Nice job. And your lovely wife, tell us her name.
Tabitha.
is watching you right now. We don't want to embarrass Tabitha.
No, no, no.
You know, she's got to be
by the way, my favorite hair color is blonde.
Of course it is.
Yes.
Of course it is.
That's right. Yeah, from last week, you had that discussion. I know which side my bread is buttered on.
I know. There you go. I know. Listen, you do so well at what author Dorothy Parker, another great storyteller, endorsed so passionately. Sometimes we have to inspire and encourage ourselves through personal narrative. And we start with what we know. What we know is home stuff, right? We know home.
We know home.
You are enjoying the hell out of my guest, Texas teller Larry Thompson, on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. I know you teach storytelling as a training method. You're a member of American Society for Training and Development. I used to be as well. And storytelling you use in business in particular. You shared with me a little about a recent training program that you facilitated for women in leadership. Tell us about that.
That group is called We Lead, and it's specifically designed for women executives. And they called me, wanted me to come over and speak to them at one of their meetings. These are executives from large companies and small. There were probably 40 different women in the room, and we talked about using storytelling in business. Mm-hmm. Five or six different kinds of stories that you should always have in your hip pocket, where your product came from, what makes your product different than others. And it's more than just the speeds and feeds, as we used to say. It's the actual story of your company, and you need to be able to relate that. And it was a message that fell on the crowd and was well received.
Yeah.
Storytelling in business is, I've been doing it for 30 or so years, and people just relate better to stories.
Yeah, they do. Absolutely. Well, it paints images. It proves success. You can't walk into a job interview, I'm a great leader, take my word for
it. Exactly.
You've got to have a story.
That's
You've got
exactly
to have
right.
a narrative, right? You've got to have a narrative. Now, I know you don't mind my saying this. You were an adopted kid.
I sure was.
And just in a few seconds, tell us, how does storytelling play a part in your home? Who was your storyteller?
The first storyteller and probably one of my all-time favorite storytellers was my father. He was a minister, and we lost him in 1979, but... Hmm. He was a larger-than-life character, and he used story all the time.
Yeah.
And we told stories, and we were encouraged to speak. And not only that, we were encouraged by being listened to.
Yeah.
You know,
beautiful.
A story is a two-part thing. Yeah. I got to speak, and you got to listen. Mm-hmm. And somebody needs to be there to listen to you. And that was a great encouragement.
Yeah, that storyteller-listener connection is a very unique one. It really is. Listen, tell us about your website. Tell us where we can nail you if we want to hire you.
Sure. You can find me at texasstorytelling.com. I'm not sure how I managed to get that so late in the game. You know, I've only had it for 6 or 7 years, but TexasStorytelling.com will find me. Facebook, everybody's using Facebook now.
Right.
I love that. It's a great medium to work in. Mm-hmm. You can find me on there at LT Stories. That's a pretty easy way to find it. Just search for Larry Thompson on there as well. There are a few other Larry Thompsons out there, but you'll know me because I probably have a big hat on and I'm a microphone and my hand is outstretched, and you know you'll know it when you see it. But
now you came here right from San Antonio.
I came right down the street
from San Antonio, right here to our little modest show.
We're just we came down, and the traffic actually parted as
parted.
We were coming down
I-10. I knew it would.
It was great. We didn't miss an exit or anything.
My God, I can't believe that. Thank you, Larry, for traveling from San Antonio to do our modest little program and for reminding us what author Charles Glassman believed, and that is that our story begins at home. But it doesn't have to end there, does it?
It doesn't have to end
there. It's one of those ignition keys. It's a seed of discovery, but it does not have to end there. Listen, get to Larry's concert this Saturday night on Heights Boulevard. Get to that church. Get to the church on time. See Larry. And again, St. Andrew's Church, it's 18, right? 18, what was the address again, Shannon?
1819,
right?
I believe it is.
1819, it is. Yeah, 1819.
We're
going
to leave
right
now
by
and
Beck's.
Head there,
right.
We're so gonna, we're not
right.
late.
We can go to Beck's Burger right behind the place, have dinner, have a ball. You're going to love it. I'll be there early, and I'd love to meet all of you anyway.
You're going to wear a clean shirt also?
I'm going to try to.
Outstanding.
Yeah, I'm going to try to talk to my wife about that.
That's
but she
good.
Likes, I don't know. Yeah. In the meantime, see, we're almost done. Pretty darn good.
You know, tell me to come back and do this again.
I will.
Twist my arm.
I will.
You
absolutely.
Folks can't see it, but he's got my arm way around.
I
got to
tell you
right
something
now.
Because that theme song is letting us know that unfortunately we are ending, but this was great. We're going to be there on Saturday night. You're going to have a mob, I'm telling you. Scooter is up next with the inner side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week, I'm Dr. Hank reminding you, it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
The Summer Sizzle Fun Drive is over, but the needs of your Pacifica radio station still go on. KPFT and Electro Love Radio Show are having a fundraiser November 7th at Last Concert Cafe. Electro Love Fest will have bands from Houston and Austin, and we're looking for supporters interested in the great perks sponsors will receive. For information on how individuals, artists, professionals,